Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, December 20th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold struggled, silver struggled, but, you know, it's not the best numbers that I've seen for a comeback, but, you know, when you see in the amount of strength we have in the dollar, and gold was able to reverse itself a little bit today, still down, but currently down on the New York spot aftermarket, you're looking at 630 to the downside at 1132. We hit a low of 1125. It did try to come back in the last couple hours of trade. So we'll see what it does tomorrow. Silver did the same thing, clawed back $16.14, up 9 cents today, hit a low of 15.52. So you had a nice turnaround there, 60 cent turnaround. Platinum was up $5 today at $924. Palladium was down 11 at 671. The USDX today was up 0.12 at 103.27. Crude oil was up 11 at 52.22. And the paper markets today, I think everybody wants the Dow to hit 20,000, no kidding. And, you know, you're looking for parity with the U.S. dollar and the euro. You had the markets up 90 points today at 19,973. The NASDAQ was up 26 and 5,483, and the S&P was up 8 at 2270. 10-year yield today, 2.57%. The euro is 104, so it's close. We're getting close, so, you know, everything is just hunky-dory. Did you ever hear that phrase, Al? Hunky-dory.
No, that was before my time, Melody.
Yeah, I don't think so. Everything is just hunky-dory.
It was. It was that's one of those things that the old people say. I never...
Hunky-dory in, the paper markets today. However, what's interesting, as you know, we saw, and again, you know, it's just a little trend that I look at every day. I don't talk about it every day, but when it does something interesting, I will talk about it. The Fear and Greed Index, what emotion is driving the market? You know, I was up there like at about 87, 86, 88, very strong for extreme greed. And here you have the Dow approaching 20,000, and it actually backed off of those high numbers. We're still at 78. But I, you know, today was the first day that I saw it. I mean, it dropped to like 84, I think it was yesterday. But 78 is a pretty big drop considering we're approaching the 20,000 level in the Dow. And consumer sentiment is so strong. So just an interesting little item of information there too. It just gave me
contemplate.
Pause. Does it mean anything? Well, you know what? Maybe, maybe not, but just interesting.
Had an article here from AFP, and the headline is Planes Grounded as Smog Chokes China for Fifth Day. You know, I would imagine that most of the people listening, you've probably seen some photographs of what's going on in China, at least in some parts of China. Allegedly, about a ninth of China, 11%, is so consumed by smog that you can barely drive or see what's going on. I've seen pictures of people where it looks like they're caught in something like a bizarre snowstorm where you can't actually see more than 20, 30 feet. Can't make out outlines or anything. I mean, it's just, it's gone. And the reason to bring this to your attention is, you know, we talk about what, or a lot of people talk about what an extraordinary industrial power China is and the rest of that sort of thing. China has lots of big problems. They don't have enough water. The water they have is badly polluted. Cities are sinking. Peking has allegedly fallen something like 5-8 feet, I don't recall clearly, compared to what its elevation used to be, and it's because they've been pumping all the water out of the underground reservoirs, and the result is the ground is settling down where it used to be supported by water. Now it's just settling down into the void. There's problems in China that are enormous, and they're going to be long-term, and for me, the prospects for China are not what a lot of people imagine. I don't think of China. I think China is more of a paper tiger than anything else. Yeah, it's second largest economy in the world right now. But we'll see how long they can hold that together. Here's some of the comments from the article. It says heavy smog suffocated northeast China for a fifth day Tuesday, with hundreds of flights canceled and road and rail transport grinding to a halt under low visibility conditions. Planes are grounded because of the smog. That's astonishing to me. I mean, I cannot. We've had smog in this country. We think it's bad, or we've thought it was bad in the past, but I don't remember smog ever. I can't remember ever before hearing of an instance where airplanes are grounded because there's too much smog. But I understand it on one level. I can imagine that it's possible for a plane to take off in the smog. But how do you land in the smog? Can't see the runway. You know, it's coming in on an instrument landing. You can't see the runway. And the truth of the matter is even the takeoffs would be risky and impaired. But it strikes me as strange. Airplanes are grounded as smog chokes China for the fifth day. More than 20 cities have entered a state of red alert. Emergency measures aimed at cutting emissions and protecting the public health from the toxic miasma include construction sites closed. Authorities have reduced the number of vehicles allowed on the roads. Levels of PM2.5, microscopic particles harmful to human health, climbed to 844 in the area. That number is almost 34 times the World Health Organization's recommended maximum exposure of 25 over a 24-hour period. I mean, their pollution over there is 34 times the World Health Organization's maximum exposure level. This is serious business. It's one thing to have a little pollution, things get gray, and the rest of us. No, this is far more, far deeper than that. On the previous day, the count of PM10, which are larger particles that contribute to the thick haze, was off the charts, exceeding the maximum reading of 999. On the streets of Beijing, buildings disappeared into a yellowish haze so thick that the city closed several major highways. Trains, too, were running slowly, with at least 11 delays in the capital and another 34 halted in the neighboring port city of Tianjin. A port city, you would think, that's out there along the ocean, the air would be clear enough. The forces of the presence of the ocean and the open space and the rest of that sort of thing, you would think that pollution would be improbable, or at least diminished at that location. But nope, in the ocean, or at least at the port city of Tianjin, still serious pollution. Most of China's smog is blamed on the burning of coal for electricity and heating, which spikes when demand peaks in winter. The issue is a source of enduring public anger in China, where fast economic growth in recent decades has come at the cost of widespread environmental degradation. And here's some comments from the social media where Chinese people were commenting on it said they vented their anger and disbelief at the conditions which authorities have long vowed to improve. One guy, he posted, "I thought Beijing was attacked by a nuclear weapon this morning." He got up and looked out the window and couldn't see anything. He thought there must be an ongoing nuclear war right now. Another one said, "My throat hurts and itches. My head hurts too." The third one says, "I think Beijing people can only stand it and not protest because the party has tamed us so well." Now that strikes me. That's an extraordinary statement to me. When people sit back and they say, "We have been so tamed, so domesticated by the government that we can't do anything but endure." Right? We can't really protest. That to me signals that there is pent-up energy, political energy, where people are angry, right? And they understand that they have been damaged by their government and that they are unable to protest in the way they want to. They're unable to accomplish the goals that they think are best for them. The government is indifferent to their concerns and is instead interested only in, perhaps in this instance, building the economy, and in doing so, they've caused environmental problems that are horrific. I've seen pictures of rivers in China that are red. And I don't mean like communist celebration or something like that. I mean they are red from top to bottom. And
they what would you expect? They're a communist nation. I mean, yeah. That's what you get.
Well, it's what you get with central planning, perhaps all the time.
These are communists.
Communists.
Course, I mean, you could say, well, we got communists right here in the States. Well, you know, there's a kinder, gentler, you know, maybe more socialist on the way to communists. There's certainly some areas you can certainly absolutely say, yeah, you know, but...
Well, China's problem is not simply that they're communistic. China's problem is they've got so many people. They have problems in part because of overpopulation.
Well, they want more because they changed their birth law, so they must need more. I guess they need more women
is what's happening.
More girls.
Yeah.
More women.
Mm-hmm. Because otherwise...
Bring more population.
The whole thing is, again, you look at the demographics of China, and I'm not an expert on the subject, but it doesn't take a lot of brains to see. I believe they got 1.2 billion people. I don't know if that's correct or not, but they have an enormous number of people. They don't really have enough land. They don't really have enough agriculture. Their water supplies are polluted. Their air is polluted. They're not going to get away from this. There are people that are screaming. I mean, what's going to happen? How badly do you want to buy a car in China if you know that the roads are going to be closed periodically because of pollution? How badly do you want to buy a car if you know you can't use it sometimes just because of the air quality? And how long before China outlaws automobiles? And what does that have? What impact does that have on their industry and their capacity to make automobiles and whatever? The Chinese people want cars, and we've seen reports of traffic jams that last for a day or two. You know, you have a traffic jam here in the United States. You might have one every afternoon when you go home from work. All right, people trying to get out of the big city and get back home. All right, you have a traffic jam. It lasts for an hour or two. China's had them that lasted for a couple of days. And people just, they're caught. Miles and miles of people just jammed. They've all got cars. They all want cars, but they haven't built enough roads. They don't have an infrastructure to accommodate all the cars that people were buying. Now what do you do with them? It's just evidence to me that China is far more fragile than a lot of people suppose. They think, oh, China's a giant and powerful economy. I think they're here for a while, and I think they're going to be gone in a while also. I don't mean that they're going to disappear, but I think their position is number two economy in the world. We'll watch and see how long they can hold on to that. Just because they've got too many problems. I've talked about this once before, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, I can remember reading an article that China anticipated that 80-90% of the people working in their most important industrial province would be replaced by robots by 2020. Just a couple of years. And we're talking, they weren't talking about 10% or 20%. They're talking 80-90% of their workers would be replaced by robots. Now, what are those people going to do? What are they going to do? Are they going to immigrate into the United States? Russia? Where are they going? How do they feed themselves? What is China going to do? I mean, and on top of which, the other point of the issue on robots is if robots can replace Chinese labor, I guarantee they are cheap enough to replace American labor. I don't have an answer for this. I don't know what it... You know, the problem is the population is simply too great. And the solution to the problem is you've got to diminish the population dramatically, at least in some places. If you don't, it'll diminish itself. It's not necessary that you get into a war and you bomb people and kill them all and the rest of that sort of thing. You just leave them alone. They'll kill each other soon enough just because there's not enough food, too much pollution. So point to all of this is China is not the economic giant that a lot of people suppose. And therefore, don't get caught in situations, in my opinion. You need to be very wary of investing in corporations and industries that are primarily located in China. I don't think that's going to be a winning investment over the course of the next 5 years or more. I think you're going to see sooner or later China's going down under the weight of its own pollution and its own population. And when that happens, I don't know what'll happen in the world. Somebody else will have to step up and start manufacturing things. Maybe it'll be the United States. Perhaps it'll be Japan. Hard to say. China's big trouble. Yeah.
It's a sad day when this whole world revolves on, you got to buy. It's not about manufacturing, it's about buying. You're going to have to make sure you have enough people to supply them with enough funds so they can just continue to buy, and that's what makes the little old world go around. And it's
For a while.
But
when the people stop buying, then what happens? Then governments have to buy. And the only way governments can buy, that's what we see out of our own government to some extent, deficit financing, because they can't raise taxes because we're already in a recession, if not a depression. They can't raise taxes without making things worse. The only way they can buy more stuff is they have to borrow, which makes the debt worse. So once again, we're caught between that rock and the hard place. There is no easy solution to these problems, and how it's going to work out, I don't know, but sooner or later there is going to be, the problems are just too enormous. They cannot be solved painlessly. Right? China's population problem, China's pollution problem, whatever problems they have, this is going to be big trouble before it's all over. And just as in this country, our national debt, our problems with debt, too big to be resolved. This isn't Trump thinks he's going to have, or some people think Trump is going to save the country or whatever. He may mitigate the problems we're facing. He may do things that are sensible and we're going to see less trouble than we might have seen under other circumstances, but we are still going to see some very serious trouble in the foreseeable future. To me, it's inevitable. It can't be avoided, and we are wise to prepare for it. We're going to take a commercial. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Melody Cederstrom. We were talking about China's problems. Here's another one. Japan is in the neighborhood. This is from AFP. Japan exports hold up on yen's slide. That's the headline. Japan posted its third consecutive trade surplus Monday as November exports held up, boosted by a sharp slide in the yen. The yen is going into a period of inflation. The yen is being devalued. It is worth less today than it was a month ago. All right, there has been a sharp slide in the value of the yen. The upbeat official data came less than a week after a closely watched Bank of Japan survey showed confidence among some of the country's biggest firms rebounded for the first time in over a year. Monday's export data showed a pickup in demand for Japan-made auto parts, although shipments of vehicles and steel fell. While total shipments overseas inched down 0.4% from over a year ago, it was the smallest fall since September of last year. Traders have been moving out of the yen and into the dollar, a plus for Japan's exporters. When, as virtually everyone understands, when a currency is devalued, that is to say it's inflated, it becomes less valuable, and therefore products made in a particular country become more attractive to foreign buyers. They can buy it for cheaper currency. You're selling, if the yen, you've got a product that you used to sell for 10,000 yen. If the yen loses 10% of its value to inflation, you can still sell it for 10,000 yen, but in reality, people purchasing will be able to get it at a cost of 9,000 yen, because that's all the purchasing power that's left after 10% inflation, 10% devaluation. You're still paying 10,000 yen, but the truth is it's cheaper. Everyone understands this who looks into this. It's a little bit, it's intuitively, I don't know, it seems odd that you could talk about 10,000 yen being worth only 9,000 yen instead of 10,000. You pay 10,000, but you only get 9,000 yen's worth of purchasing power. It's a fundamental fact, and it goes to the problems we see with inflation. Now, Japan has all of it, what we're seeing. This is a function of the yen is losing value primarily in relationship to the dollar. Virtually all foreign countries measure their inflation, their currency inflation, basically in terms of the world reserve, the primary world reserve currency, which is the dollar. And again, this is a part of that teeter-totter thing I talk about from time to time. When the yen goes down in value, it creates pressure to push the dollar up in value, which is part of the reason why the dollar has gone up from 95 on the U.S. dollar index to 103 today on the U.S. dollar index in a period of a couple of weeks. We're seeing significant inflation in some foreign countries, and as a result, the inflation on their end of the teeter-totter causes deflation on the other end of the teeter-totter where the U.S. dollar sits, and the dollar becomes more valuable. Right? We see, there's China, same problem. Chinese yuan, this is from International Business Times. Chinese yuan headed for biggest annual drop in 20 years. That means drop in value, inflation. Devaluation. China's capital outflow could accelerate further in coming months as the yuan depreciates and investors gain concerns about a strengthening dollar. I don't know how many investors, at least foreign investors, are concerned about a strengthening dollar. There may be good reason for this, and we'll see, but at least initially, exporters are saying, yay, the currency, our currency, the Japanese yen, the Chinese yuan, it's diminishing in value, which means they have a competitive edge when they sell their products into foreign markets. People can buy their products with cheaper yen, cheaper yuan. This should be good for exports. However, there is a problem. The warning from Benny Lam, head of research at CEB International Investment Limited in Hong Kong, came Monday, and he warned that China's capital outflows are accelerating, with $69.2 billion reported leaving the country in November, nearly 20% more than in preceding months. People are dumping the Chinese yuan precisely because it's being devalued. It's becoming less valuable, and people say, I don't want to store my wealth in a currency that's becoming devalued because I'm losing my wealth. I want to put my wealth into a currency that will retain its value and for the moment, or even more important, deflate and go up in value. And for the last couple of months, the dollar has been deflating seriously. A couple of weeks, really. We've gone from 95 to 103 on the U.S. dollar index. That's deflation. The dollar is becoming more valuable. People are saying, look, I'm going to dump my Chinese yuan because they're becoming less valuable. I'm losing wealth if I continue to retain them, and I'm going to put my money into U.S. dollars. All right? China is losing capital because of their devaluation. And it says data from the People's Bank of China show $55 billion in foreign currency exited China's balance sheet last month, bringing to $1.1 trillion the amount that has left China since August of 2015. $1.1 trillion is approximately equal to the amount of debt U.S. Treasuries that China has held in the past. And people were all concerned, oh my gosh, if China sells the U.S. currencies all at once, he could collapse the U.S. economy. Well, they're having their own problem, right? People are not simply dumping U.S. currencies. They're also dumping the yuan, the Chinese yuan. And as a result, and why did this start? $1.1 trillion, the amount that left since China, since August 2015 when Beijing devalued the yuan. They wanted it. They started this. You understand? This is a little bit like Saudi Arabia starting the oil cuts by refusing to cut prices, refusing to cut production back 18 months ago, and they started an oil price war that has now come back to haunt Saudi Arabia as well as all other oil producing countries. Knocked the price of oil down by half. They thought they'd knock a few people out of business, and then in the end, it has hurt Saudi Arabia as much as it's hurt anyone else. Same thing's going on. China started. They intentionally devalued the yuan. They said, we'll devalue the yuan, and then we can sell more stuff. See? We can export more stuff to the world. Well, that's a great idea, except the people in China said, we don't want to hang on to the yuan if it's going to be worth less. And so they're going for foreign currencies, and particularly the dollar, if they had cents, and I don't doubt that some of them are doing this, that'd go into gold. But what we're seeing, just the same as we are seeing, we're seeing people that are responding to their currency losing value to inflation or even hyperinflation, and they are saying, let me out of here. And we can expect, and when they do, we can expect to see the same thing in this country. Sooner or later, we're going to see inflation. We're going to see U.S. dollar devaluation restored. And when we do, people are going to start saying, let me out of here. I don't want any more dollars. I want to get some other paper currency that's deflating. Or when they get their minds right and they start to realize what's really going on, they'll say, wait a second. Gold will stand up this, won't it? And people are going to say, yeah. Yeah, it is. And all of a sudden, everybody's going to say, well, gold. I think that's smart. I think I'll get some gold. U.S. dollar index. Here's another one from MarketWatch. It says, dollar index on track for highest close in 14 years. Yen slips as Bank of Japan stays put. They're pointing out, well, I'll just read the little article. The dollar rose broadly Tuesday, advancing against the Japanese yen in particular, after the Bank of Japan stood pat on interest rates. The euro, meanwhile, slipped, meaning it fell in value, as investors awaited more details about deadly attacks in Germany and Turkey. The ICE, I-C-E, U.S. dollar index, DXY, which compares the value of U.S. dollars against half a dozen rivals, rose 0.4% to 103.55. The move leaves the index on track to close at its highest since December of 2002. And it's as it goes highest, it puts, as the dollar goes up, gold goes down. All right? But you got to look at this and wonder, what has happened to the dollar? What has happened intrinsically to the dollar to make it more valuable? All right? So it closes at its highest level in 13, 14 years. What has happened? Why is the dollar more valuable? And I would say that there is no compelling reason to think that the dollar is worth any more today than it was a year ago or a month ago or a couple of weeks ago. And yet it's risen dramatically. And for me, this is just another illustration of this notion that with the world's currencies function like a giant teeter-totter, with the world reserve currency on one end of the teeter-totter and the balance of the fiat currencies on the other end of the teeter-totter. And all of them are screaming for inflation. They're all sitting back and say, inflation, inflation, I got to have more inflation so we can sell more stuff to foreign countries. But as they get more inflation, there's a problem. You get more inflation and people get out of your currency. You need more inflation to stimulate the economy, but if you have more inflation, people lose confidence in the currency. They go to somebody else's currency. Next thing you know, you have a shortage of currency in your domestic economy. There's a point to this, and it's about the balloon analogy, where if you squeeze the balloon at one end, it inevitably bulges at some other point in the balloon. And you can squeeze it when you see, aha, this is a bubble. I'm going to squeeze this bubble, and I'm going to diminish it. Well, fine, go ahead and squeeze the bubble, but it's going to bubble up somewhere else, and sooner or later, one of the bubbles will pop. There's not an easy way, there may not even be a way, where central planners can really run an economy with a fiat currency. All of the problems we're talking about with the Japanese yen and the Chinese yuan and the U.S. dollar, and we're seeing deflation in the dollar and inflation in the yen and the yuan, and in the euro also. These are all consequences of having a fiat debt-based monetary system, and that's what we've got in the United States, in China, in Japan, in the world. The whole thing is stupid. It's irrational. It can't continue to work. Some genius put this together, Lord Keynes, of Keynesian economics. He's the one who laid the foundation for much of this. And it all seems to make a certain amount of theoretical sense. But it operates on the assumption that an economy can be adequately guided, intelligently guided, reasonably, rationally guided by central planners in Washington, D.C., or Moscow, or Tokyo, or Beijing. These people sit up there, well, I studied economics, and I have a Ph.D., and I'm so much smarter than all the riffraff out there in TV land that we can run this economy. We're smart guys. And I think what's really being demonstrated time and again, and the demonstrations are becoming more, they may not be clear yet, but I think they're beginning to have more and more clarity, where we sit back and we realize these damn central planners don't know what they're doing. And in the end, all their great plans cannot be implemented without destroying the free markets. And the big question that we're going to face sooner or later is whether or not our central planners at the Federal Reserve and Washington, D.C., and Congress and the White House, are they as adept at managing the economy as we would be if we maintained free markets that were volatile, that went up dramatically, fell dramatically, right? Caused people to mainly mind their own business, and a lot of average people don't even belong in these markets. In order to make these markets safe for average people, the government has sought to regulate them and manage them and manipulate them. And the result is people have positions of power where they can do things that strike them as perhaps reasonable or perhaps even corrupt. They sit back, well, it might not be good for the average American, but it's good for the bankers, or it's good for the drug manufacturers. So pick a special interest group. Whoever they want to support, they can. They're in a position to do that. You can't exactly do that in the free market. People do. They are forced by economic objectivity to be reasonable and fair. And they can't simply manipulate. Well, government can, particularly with a fiat currency, a debt-based currency. Manipulation is possible. And where are we now? With all that manipulation, it's seemed like a great idea for several decades. But as a consequence of the government's manipulation of markets and the economy, we have piled up debt, and debt to a point where the debt can't be paid. And sooner or later, everybody's going to pick up on that, and they're going to say, oh my gosh, the government can't pay the debt. The private corporations can't pay their debt. The average person can't pay their debts. One way or another, the debts have to be eliminated. And when they are, they're going to eliminate the correlative paper assets. And all of a sudden, there is going to be not just a disappearance because the monetary system is debt-based. When you get rid of the debt, you're also going to write off the correlative paper assets. Stocks, bonds, bank accounts, pension funds, all of these little pieces of paper that say, oh, so-and-so owes me some money. I'm a rich guy. I got a piece of paper. It's got a number on it. But it's just a promise to pay in a world where there are so many debts, and all debts are promises to pay. There's so many debts, all the promises can't be kept. And when this whole thing blows up in everybody's face and all of that paper wealth gets wiped out, people will scream for tangible wealth and tangible media to store wealth. And that's going to be gold and silver. It could be land. It could be a number of things besides that. But if you want a tangible form of wealth that's liquid, meaning that it can be spent without much trouble, you'll be looking for gold and silver. And so will the world. And they'll scream for it when the paper collapses. And it's going to happen. And all, everything we see with the Japanese...
But the thing of it, you know, the thing of it is, too, Al, you don't buy gold for the collapse. And, you know, and those are one of the fundamentals. It's a main one. But I hear break music, so...
That means we have to do some break dancing. Melody and I will now do some break dancing. You can watch while I spin around on my back on the floor. Oh, you can't see that, can you? Well, I'm going to do it anyway.
We'll
be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned to our break music and break dancing.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here that has nothing to do with economics per se, but it's kind of interesting. Largest glacier in Antarctica is melting, scientists confirm. This is from International Business Times. Scientists say the unusual heat in the ocean is flooding the bottom of the Totten Glacier in East Antarctica at a rate of 220,000 cubic meters per second. Totten, East Antarctica's largest glacier, is melting from below. Okay, science confirmed in a study. The melting of Totten, which is bigger than the size of California, could contribute to a sea level rise. If the glacier were to melt completely, the global sea level could rise by at least 3.5 meters. That's almost 12 feet. According in October, NASA and the University of California, Irving were announced that glaciers in West Antarctica are retreating at an unprecedented rate because of warm water flooding beneath the ice shelf. Okay, the fundamental point here is that the warmth that is attacking the glaciers is coming from down deep in the water. It's coming from beneath the glaciers. It's not happening on top. The glaciers aren't melting on top as you would expect if there were global warming. All right, we say, oh my gosh, the air is heating up, the world is heating up because we've got too much CO2 in the atmosphere and it's retaining heat at the top, and therefore in the air, it's retaining heat in the air, and therefore we would expect the glaciers to be melting from their top surface. But they're not. They're melting at the bottom, which simply reminds me that warm water rises. If we have some massive source of warm water beneath the ice shelf, all right, where's that warm water coming from? Warm water doesn't normally sink. I know you can establish currents that'll move water at different temperatures, but normally, if it's warm, it rises. Warm air rises, warm water rises. This implies that the source of the heat that's warming the water under the glaciers is not the water's surface that's being heated by the sun or caused by heat retained in the atmosphere to increase in concentration of carbon dioxide. If the ocean's surface was being heated, why did the warmer water sink and flow down under the cold Antarctic glaciers? The clear implication is that the source of the heat that's melting the Antarctic glaciers is at least partially and perhaps predominantly coming from the bottom of the ocean and rising upward to reach the glaciers from underneath. This implies that global warming is not primarily caused by mankind's civilization and use of energy, but it is instead the result of rising temperatures inside the Earth itself. And this implication is not unique to Antarctica. They did a study that I saw probably about 3-4 months ago. First time I was aware of this. They've noticed that the glaciers in Iceland, either Iceland or Greenland, maybe Greenland, one of the two right up there in the North Atlantic, but they noted that the glaciers were melting at an increased rate, and surprise, surprise, they were melting from the bottom up. They were melting because the ground under the glaciers was warming, and that ground is not warming because of increased concentrations of carbon dioxide. It's melting because it's warming because something's happening inside the Earth itself that's causing the temperature of the Earth to rise. So the point to all of this, and the reason I said this strikes me as interesting, is this is evidence. It may not be proof, but it's evidence that our fears of global warming are to some extent misguided. It may be that global warming is coming from inside the Earth rather than from primarily, I don't mean exclusively, but primarily from inside the Earth rather than from man's use of energy on the surface of the Earth. So maybe we're not having global warming in the sense people are worried about. Maybe there's nothing that mankind can do about this. If the Earth is getting hotter on the inside for reasons we don't know or understand, but if it's getting hotter on the inside, what are we going to do? Drill a hole and throw a couple bags of ice down there? I mean, there's no way to stop this. It may be that global warming is not subject to human control.
Well, you wonder what goes on. I mean, sometimes when you think about the amount of water that's on this planet, that if you have a little situation someplace and for it to affect, like from Japan, everybody talks about the Fukushima radiation and so forth. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a lot of water in between, and no doubt it gets watered out, sent out, and so forth. So when you look at the Earth as a whole, you know, what would you have to do within, other than the Earth's core, to heat up that Earth? But when you think about the radiation from Fukushima, that's got to add warmth to the water, you would think.
I don't know if it does or not. I don't know.
I don't know. You have all the testing in the waters of various nuclear explosions from various governments. We know they test underwater. You know, one of the main reasons or
not much anymore. I don't know if they do today. There was a time when they did it, Bimini and the rest of that sort of thing in the 50s.
Well, I'm sure
they
still do it. I mean, North Korea and a lot of these other places, you bet they still do it. You don't think China isn't doing it and so forth. So you have all those cables that run underground. Do they produce any heat? So
yeah, but
I mean,
not
we're
enough
disturbing enough. We're disturbing enough of, you know, possible jet stream. I don't know what you call the water, not jet streams or.
Well, there's currents. There's underwater
various
currents. The Gulf Stream and the rest.
You know, are we affecting currents through our various shipping?
No doubt.
The amount of shipping, cargo ships that, you know, go. Or do we change things just by the amount of pollution, the fuel, the disruptions? Yeah, I think we do.
Still,
but it's not the. I don't believe it's you and me. I think it's you know, something
of a much.
Of course,
it's not you and me, Melody.
But I do believe they all can have an impact. And
well, they all have. I don't doubt all sorts of things have impact. I'm not arguing that there's no impact from civilization or use of energy and carbon dioxide. I'm not arguing there's no impact, but I am suggesting that the most of the impact, it may be emanating from inside the Earth. And we've seen evidence again up in Greenland. We've seen evidence, glaciers in Greenland melting at the bottom, not at the top.
It's of the flow of the water, and you know, you know. And I do believe, I'm not a global warmer, but I do believe we are experiencing something, and it could just very well be a normal process of the Earth.
I agree. And the point is, don't be bamboozled into giving up rights and property because of global warming. It's, you do this, we're going to stop global warming. Maybe what passes for global warming and the idea that it's caused by too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And I don't doubt, I'm not arguing that there's no truth to that. But still the idea that it's fundamentally, primarily caused by that, and therefore we have to stop whatever it is produces carbon dioxide. We have to stop producing that carbon dioxide. Maybe that's not true. And the evidence suggests that maybe you need to be cautious when someone says, do what I say, because when we're going to take your car away to prevent global warming, and maybe it won't have much of an effect. Maybe the primary source is within the Earth, and it has nothing to do with our automobiles and our carbon dioxide production.
I'll guarantee you, government multinational corporations pollute this planet more so than any human driving a vehicle does. And if they really wanted to do something about the planet, if they really wanted to do something about the pollution, and they really wanted to, if they really cared about the people and the planet, the first thing they would do is address the plastic situation. Plastics probably destroy more environmentally than, you know, than any car driving from PA to California. So, you know, address that situation. That damages, and again, you have all these pollutants in the waters, the stuff that they, you know, it's just, no, they do more damage than any vehicle and lawnmower that they tell us. You know, they try to blame the people. They try to blame the people
are responsible
for doing it.
People aren't responsible. People are responsible.
No, they're responsible for their governments. They're responsible for the multinational corporations and saying no.
Yep.
But hey, they have it pegged against us. They got all the, you know, who can afford millions and billions of dollars worth of attorney fees, you know, to stop any of them. So, but no, I believe it's a natural cause, and I believe it's you know, a lot of things that the government testings and so forth and the multinational corporations, but. So there's a lot of problems, and I don't see any of
them being
addressed.
There's things we don't know and we don't understand, and my main point is, look, don't be bamboozled by anybody, including me. I'm just making a report here that's saying, look, it appears that the source of the global warming is coming from inside the Earth, and that's something we can't control. And if that's true, don't allow yourself to be pushed around by people saying we're going to save the world by getting rid of carbon dioxide. Maybe they're not. Right. Maybe, in fact, the problem is something that we don't yet even understand, and we're only barely beginning to recognize. And, you know, it's a little bit of Rahm Emanuel and Hillary Clinton were famous for saying, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. When we have a crisis and people get excited about something, and maybe hysterical, that's when you can step in and you can bamboozle them. You can hustle them, you can con them, you can get them to do what you want them to do if you take advantage of the crisis. Don't waste the crisis. Well, global warming is a crisis. I mean, you have to separate between the people who are trying to solve and minimize that crisis and the people that are trying to exploit the crisis, because the ones that are trying to exploit it, they're not going to solve it. They don't want it solved. They want to use it and ride it and exploit it as long as humanly possible. Right? And we have to be careful to discern. I have to sit back and say, wait a second, is this reasonable? Is this right? Or are we doing something stupid while we're being led by people who have really a completely different agenda? They use the crisis, but it's not their objective to solve the crisis. You and I have things we'd like to do. We'd like to solve problems. Some people want to use problems, and therefore they want to prolong those problems. And we have to discern between the people that are trying to do the right thing, if we can even understand what the right thing is in these kind of circumstances, and people who want to just take advantage of the problems that are there and lie to the public. So all I'm trying to do is watch out. Young people, watch out. Here's another one that's interesting. Got just a couple of minutes left before we take a break. This deals with dark matter. Again, not a financial situation. Still interesting. There was a man. I have a blog, and there was a guy who was a Harvard Law School graduate. He hung out on my blog on a lot. Spent a lot of time writing articles, and they were intelligent comments and the rest of it. Very intelligent guy. And he was almost always critical of whatever it was I said on the blog. But he was an atheist. And he thought, and among other things, he thought it was just ridiculous that people would worship an invisible God. However, he believed in the red shift and the Big Bang theory advanced by, I believe it was Edwin Hubble, in the early 1900s. Edwin Hubble, I believe, is the source of the Big Bang theory. I might be mistaken about that, but it's the theory that the universe started from just a small point. Everything blew up, and it started from there, and it's still expanding because of from the explosion. It was a brilliant theory, and it was instantly adopted by secularists. And 20 years later, however, they learned how to calculate the mass of the universe, the mass and energy of the universe. They developed reliable calculations, and they realized that the Big Bang theory couldn't work with the amount of mass and energy that they calculated to exist in the world. In fact, what they calculated, according to them, was only they only came up with 5 or 10% as much mass and energy as they needed to make the Big Bang theory work, and therefore, they postulated dark energy and dark matter, which allegedly is here, but we can't sense it, we can't taste it, see it, touch it, we can't photograph it, but it has to be here. Why? To make the Big Bang theory work. And my point is that when I pointed out to our Harvard Law School graduate that his belief in the Big Bang theory believed in the idea that 85-90% of the universe can't be seen, touched, tasted, or sensed, but it still has to be there just to support the Big Bang theory, I said, look, your Big Bang theory is 85-90% invisible. The foundation of your evolutionary thinking is based on an invisible mass and an invisible energy, and you laugh about an invisible God, and yet you believe staunchly in a universe where 85-90% of the mass and energy can't be seen, touched, sensed, right? Well, that was the last time he wrote on my blog. The Harvard Law School graduate realized that the dark matter concept is quite probably just a device to hang on to the Big Bang theory. And they have to postulate an invisible world in order to make the Big Bang theory. And if the Big Bang theory doesn't work, what are we left with? We are left with the creationism that's found in the Bible. There's other theories besides that. But the point, Big Bang, dark matter, they may be interesting, but they are not science that anyone can prove and support. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.